evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, we've had a lot of rain here in Illinois, and some areas are real hot and dry. That's what I've heard, especially out in the West Coast. Friends out there say there hadn't been any rain, and they're having water problems. So you never know what's going to happen. Well, the daily things and everything, our plan was to continue on with a conversation from last week, but I'm not sure where my guests are, what the health of the guests are. You know, everybody's having problems. So if anybody wants to call to join in and have the conversation, join us again. Come on. The phone number is 888-874-4888. So anybody wants to call in and join us tonight again, please do. 888-874-4888. Boy, there's just so much that's been going on. Another number that you could call if you can't get through on the 800 number, and this is not toll-free, though, is 646-926-5427. Well, Denise, I know, was going out to the Warren Shoes Clinic in Washington, D.C., or, I mean, not in Washington, D.C., out in the West Coast, so hopefully everything went good out there, find out what was happening to her. And what we could do is go a little bit over that, some of the stuff there, what's in the wrist plans and everything else. They have a wrist handbook. I'm going to pull this thing up and go over this a little bit. Okay. And the War-Related Illness Injury Study Centers. Again, the reason for this thing is provide information to clinicians, refer combat veterans for past and future conflicts with difficult to diagnose and debilitating illnesses to the Department of Veteran Affairs War-Related Illness Study Centers. And there's three of those, anyhow, what have happening. So, again, this thing has come out, and it's an area of really good. The people out there are just tremendous. I mean, when I went out to them in Washington, D.C., they were really, really good. So, again, gathering the information, trying to help everybody. The problem we run into is just like everybody else in all the other places, once you get the medical information, medical recommendations, that doesn't mean that your practitioner actually follows through. The mission of the RIS is to provide health-related service to veterans who served in a theater of combat operations or in combat support during a past, current, or future conflict and whose subsequent service have suffered or are suffering or suffer from difficult-to-diagnose disabling illnesses. Such services include clinical care, risk communication, education, research addressing potential environmental exposures and experiences and adverse health outcomes. Again, put together for the VA. Eligibility, veterans must serve in an area of combat. To determine whether a veteran has served in the combat for a person's risk, the VA relies on the same citations and criteria used to determine a veteran's eligibility for readjustment counseling at the VA center. So, again, the whole thing. Veterans must have undiagnosed or difficult-to-diagnose illnesses or disabling unexplained symptoms. And a lot of this comes into play, so it's pretty much wide open because most everybody, what we know from Operation Desert Storm, you know, Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, they're having the same medical problems. The epidemiology is showing up the same thing. The exposures are pretty much the same thing. Have anybody called in yet? Okay. Veterans must be medically and psychiatrically stable for participation and evaluation of risk since these are fairly intense 4 to 5 day programs. Also, the risk staff must make a determination the veteran is likely to benefit from such evaluation. Serious ill patients with well-established diagnosis, even if they're not responding to recommended therapy, usually are not appropriate candidates for a risk referral. So you didn't have everything what's happening. It depends on what's going down. The veteran's VA primary care physician is responsible for the referral. So, I mean, you have to come on down. This veterans cannot self-refer to the RIS. They have to be referred by a non-VA provider or be referred by a non-VA provider. So, in other words, has to come down for your primary care at one of the VAs. And, again, this is what Denise has talked about, and she talked about a little bit as she was talking about going out there for her assessment again. Coming on down. You know, you're looking at the criteria, same thing. Any veteran served in theater operations during World War II and is eligible for one or more of the following campaign medals. So you got all of that stuff that came on down. any veterans serving theater of operations in Vietnam during the Vietnam era. Again, that's from July in 1965 through May in 1975, 10 years. You know, there might be some questions because Vietnam actually started back in 60 and 61 when Kennedy sent the first advisors in, so we'd have to look at that. Any veteran who served in the Lebanon Theater of Operations, again, that's 1982 through 1984. Any veteran who served in the Grenada Theater of Operations, again, that's 1983. That's October 1983 through November 83. Any veteran who served in the Panama Theater of Operations, again, that's December of 89 through January of 90. And then, obviously, we got Desert Storm and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And what's real interesting, Gulf War is began in August 2nd of 1990, and it's not ended. So some people think if they break it into Gulf War I and Gulf War II, but it's all still basically the same thing, just different phases thereof. And so you've got everything in the continuation there. So what they're looking at for this purpose is Desert Storm, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, all of this stuff, New Dawn, are all one and the same. Any veteran who served in Somalia Theater of Operations from September 1992 and ending by presidential proclamation or law. And we do know, again, we have the Somalia message, we do know depleted uranium was used in Somalia because the Pentagon put out the order mandating medical care for the use of DU in Somalia. Now, what we know, I have no idea why they used it or what it came about, other than it's just incredibly good at all targets. Because one thing that's been said over and over again, primarily that DU was for use against armor. Well, we know it's been used against every target imaginable, and it's extraordinarily effective against conventional construction and housing and everything else because of the way it functions. Okay, so you got all these veterans who are there. Requests for medical services do not meet eligibility requirements may still qualify for such services. If the veteran's DD-214 shows an award to Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal for serving some other conflict, again, not listed. So it's pretty much wide open, and when you get to them, what you get all the information to them, you go through your primary care physician and get the info out there. Again, there's a pre-screen application that's on the VA computer completed by your primary care and you working together, all your demographic information, who you are, where you are, combat veteran, where'd you serve, all the stuff happened, what are your medical problems, and, you know, the doctor has to put all this stuff in. You know, again, things that'll happen, risks in the computer systems, again, the exams, data referral, list all medically unexplained war-related symptoms, is a veteran medically stable for travel, your demographics, all that stuff that you have to have. Same thing, that all changes and nothing changes there. Military information, military service in combat area, dates of deployment, military occupational specialty. Now, this becomes really critical for MOS or AFSC or whatever you happen to have, your Navy rating, because different occupational specialties or different jobs resulted in all kinds of complex exposures or complex events or different combat. And one thing they have to remember, and again, we saw this in Desert Storm, a lot of times the medical staff and the preventive medicine staff, which I was a part of, had incredible amounts of exposures because they were all over, as did the forward line troops. But again, it was a little bit different, and the intensity became different. Okay, military unit in which the veteran served, again, prisoner of war status, all the medical information, they're looking at all the allergies, active medications, what the problems list, social history. Again, this is all important, occupational history, tobacco and alcohol use, substance abuse, social living situation. All this comes into play. Occupational history is really important. One of the problems we're running into with the current military and everybody and past military is their ability to keep employed or do the job that they had before. Sometimes you can't do it. We've got, as Denise has talked, we've had many others. Patricia's expressed the same thing. And a lot of them, we've had way too many doctors and nurses and other medical professionals after they went to war and came back injured, where they got neurological problems or they've got memory problems of having to give up the profession. So we see that happening all over the place. So the occupational history of what it's done and what the implications of your health effects come into play. Tobacco and alcohol use, again, all this stuff comes into play, substance abuse. We talked about on this show before on substance abuse. We both got both prescription drug abuse. We've got over-the-counter abuse, and then we've got street drug abuse. So all this stuff has that, and then your social living situation. Military exposure. Well, this is pretty much the same thing in the post-deployment physical assessment form, the DD-2796. And again, the question is, do you have any of the following? Smoke from burning of oil wells, diesel, kerosene, or other petrochemical fumes, fuels, paints or other petrochemical substances, depleted uranium. We've discussed that ad nauseum. Radiation. Now, radiation comes from a whole bunch of things. We have both ionizing radiation and non-ionizing radiation. The ionizing radiation is all your radioactive materials, especially not only depleted uranium, but all of the other equipment that we have to have radioactive isotopes. And then when you go up into war, especially with the Iraq equipment and all this stuff, we have so much Soviet-era equipment, those things are chock full of radioactive isotopes, especially on the dials and gauges and everything else. So you've got all of this stuff, and then you've got all the industrial radioactive materials, the agricultural radioactive materials, and medical radioactive materials that are released. Pesticides. Couldn't get worse. You know, I mean, pesticides are a nightmare. Total misuse of pesticides in the military never ends, and that happens in both combat and back in cantonment area and back in the States and all over. Just a total disregard. Nerve gas. Well, nerve gas isn't really a gas. Nerve gas is a liquid, a mist. I mean, it has a different volatility and everything else, and everything is still evaporates, but it still functions as a liquid. It's not a gas, and I'm not sure how all that stuff started, but the misnomers and everything got it. We look at sarin and cyclosarin. It pretty much looks like water. It's have a consistency and all this stuff of similar to water. And then when you get to VX and everything, this stuff gets really heavy as it goes through the chemical compound structure and almost like a motor oil. So you have this mustard again, the same thing, contaminated food. That's a nightmare no matter where you go. You got contaminated food from both, all the stuff on the battlefield. You also got contaminated food because of food processing, food storage, and food use. So again, you have to have proper sanitation and proper temperature maintenance on all your food problems. Contaminated water. Boy, I mean, where do we go with that? That's a nightmare. The people are bathing in, they're drinking in, they're washing with it. It's being used to prepare foods and everything else. We know from Desert Storm, we had tremendous water contamination problems as used to process food. So all that stuff, we had tremendous contamination problems from what we call the starlighters. This is where the water was up in the upper container in a wooden box, basically, and you went in to take a shower and you got clean. So all the stuff that's in the environment is coming back into the water, and then you get it into you. So you've got inhalation, ingestion, absorption, and injection. And so you've got all this stuff. Okay, ammunition, missile explosions within 1 mile radius of the locale. Did that happen? I mean, again, the same thing. All the biological agents. And we have to remember that Iraq got the biological agents, and the other ones did because the U.S. Army and the British and Germans and the Russians shipped them to them for use. Again, part of the Regal Commission report from the United States Senate. Harsh living conditions. Where did you live? How did you live? I mean, that creates a nightmare. Insect bites. I mean, where do we go? Again, you can do all the stuff for your protection, but again, we have insects all out there, and you're going to come in contact with them. POWs, again, endemic diseases and everything. All this stuff is transferred. Had contact with dead animals. We know we had dead animals all any time of combat operation. So you got all this stuff. You can have chemical and biological exposures resulting in death of the animals. You can have hazardous materials resulting in death of the animals. And then you've got standard conventional, just got blown up or shot or died there. So coming in contact with anything is extraordinarily dangerous. Dead animals and the contamination there, they're probably more dangerous when they're dead than when they're alive. And you have to be very, very careful. And so processing that and all that, how you work with it, is a nightmare. Did you wear protective, chemical protective gear or heard chemical alarms? That's the old mop gear. what we call the MOPUR and CPOG. And so, I mean, it's a whole bunch of different acronyms for the same thing. Did the chemical alarms go off? Well, we know they did during Desert Storm. I was there when they went off in a nightmare. Did you witness death of any type? Experience any sexual assault or sexual harassment? All the vaccines are preventive measures. Again, the same thing turned into a problem. And the vaccines, we know we came in, and all the preventive measures, again, are for anthrax, smallpox, yellow fever, botulism, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, rabies, malaria, pyridostigmine pills and tablets, the nap things. Those are little white pills that came in the 21-pill blister packs, and everybody was eating. Now, again, the PB tablets or the nap, what are called pyridostigmine bromide, those are a carbamide-based pesticide, and they do result in neurological problems. And so what you have with the neurological problems of that is without any antidote, it starts building up. So then you have the PB tablets with the nerve agents, and you get hit by pesticide or you get hit by low-level nerve agents, and then we just got a neurological disaster on our hands. Any other exposures? Okay, again, putting all this stuff down. Has anybody called in? Paul? Denise? Patricia? Okay, if anybody are listening, anybody wants to call in, please call in. Again, 888-874-4888. Okay, they're getting in the general thing, and again, looking at all the medical stuff and everything has come down. Key thing, we're going to, you know, the doctor is going to make an assessment of the skin, that's dermat, you know, the derm, head, ears, eyes, nose, and throat, make an assessment of the respiratory, make an assessment of cardiovascular, make an assessment of gastrointestinal, make an assessment of genounitary, the muscular skeletal problems, hematological, which is blood, peripheral, vascular, and neurological. And what we're seeing, again, with both Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, again, the Desert Storm, all this other stuff, we're seeing complex medical problems that go across the whole gamut. So it's not just any one single thing. So we're seeing interrelationships and synergistic relationships with these medical problems. Hence the reason on the handbook outlines what they want to look at all of the systems and again come back and forth to evaluate the systems both individually and synergistically. How do they all come together? Psychiatrically, again, here's another thing. Is a veteran experiencing symptoms of active suicidal ideation? Is a veteran acutely or mentally ill? And all this stuff. And one thing we got to look at the psychiatric one, PTSD, and we've talked about it on the program before and everything else with the PTSD. PTSD is not necessarily a mental health problem. PTSD can be a function of neurophysiology and, again, toxicity of the brain and everything else and how it functions. The other thing, too, and what we're all running into is just the great ethical and moral crisis that everybody's running into with the wars we've been doing, going back for sure to Vietnam and maybe before. I mean, you know, World War I was cut and dried. World War II was cut and dried. But ever since that, I mean, the justification for war and the reasons and everything have become real clouded. And was there any threat to the United States? Yes or no. And then when you get sent to war, did they pose any threat to us? Yes or no. Well, all this stuff comes into the PTSD function with the ethical and moral crisis. Because if you have a conventional enemy and all the stuff that you're known and where they did any attacks and everything, that's one of the things by justification. But when you come into a thing, just go attack the nation without any justification, that's a whole other ballgame. And so now you have all of the problems associated with PTSD, but they're from the ethical and moral crisis. Well, then we have to do all the physical exam findings, all the vitals, all the weight, height, general appearance, condition of skin, condition of the head, ears, nose, and throat, conditions of the lungs, the cardiovascular. The cardiovascular, again, is the cardiac. That's your heart and associated things there and how it all ties together. Continue on doing an assessment of the abdomen. That's your gut, the genitalia, the rectal exam, and then the extremities. And then you've got a complete neurological exam. Well, we know that neurological problems are a significant problem for military personnel, especially those who went to Desert Storm and then obviously the current time and everything. and then get back into the psychiatric. Well, then you got all your lab work that has to be done, okay? And it gets to be pretty complex. Complete blood count, again, that's a CBC, multiple chemistry screening tests, okay, all your liver function tests, thyroid stimulating hormone, all your thyroid testing, venereal disease, again, all this stuff, occult blood, vitamins, human HIV, all of this stuff, human immunodeficiency virus, hepatitis panel, erythrocyte sedimentation rate, all this stuff, your analysis, and then diagnostic information, again, x-rays and all any MRIs or CAT scans, electrocardiograms, okay, electromyogram, that's for your neurological and all your sleep studies, and then if there's any consults or anything, an assessment, and then you have to have a plan. So, I mean, it gets into pretty complex stuff and everything else. Has anybody called in? Okay. That plan where we had the invitation, I guess things kind of fell apart. Well, unfortunately, we'll keep going. No biggie. So anyhow, that's what's in the risk handbook. And as you can see, the risk handbook pretty much matches, again, the information on the post-deployment physical assessment form. And let's go back and talk about that a little bit. I'm going to pull it up here, and we'll make sure that all this stuff is forwarded for the archives on the program, so people can go and pull up these documents again and look at them for themselves or take them to their doctor and get help. Now, with the new laws passed, again, if you fall under that criteria, you can go to a civilian provider that's involved in TRICARE and everything else that, you know, makes it very nice. But again, they have to have the information, as we've talked about before. Just because they're there doesn't mean that they have any information or knowledge about the exposures and how to provide medical care for complex exposures encountered. The post-deployment physical assessment form, health assessment form 2796, is where it all began. I mean, everybody should have had a pre-deployment physical. Hopefully you got a copy of that. And that status is everything gold, because you should have been extraordinarily healthy when you're deployed, not, you know, being deployed when you're already sick or in need of medical care. And then when you return, everybody is supposed to have the DD-2796, a support deployment physical assessment done by a doctor or a PA, something like that. Again, you got all your demographic data, your name, date, Social Security, date of birth, you know, when you got, where were you deployed to, what was happening, your gender, male or female, service branch, Army, Air Force, Army, Coast Guard, Marines, Navy, or other. A component, active duty, National Guard Reserve, civilian government employee. Now, we had a lot of contractors involved in the DU project and other projects at the end of the war and moving stuff out. So we had a lot of contractors in Desert Storm. And again, there were a lot of contractors in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. So where are they and what is happening? The location of the operation, where were you at? Europe, Southwest Asia, Southeast Asia, Asia Other, Australia, Africa, Central America. Unknown, South America, North America, or other. What was your pay grade? Well, in some cases, people had multiple pay grades and multiple deployments over a period of time. And again, that's where you need to do a 2796 update one all the time. What areas remained you deployed to? Again, Kuwait, Qatar, Afghanistan, Bosnia, were you on a ship? Were you in Iraq, Turkey, Uzbekistan, Kosovo, CONUS, or other? What was the name of the operation or operations you were involved in? What was your occupational specialty? Again, you know, you got the Navy rating, you got the MOS, and you got the AFSC. You know, so again, the different branches of the service have one way of putting all this stuff. Okay, was there a medical threat debriefing, medical information sheet distributed, and all this stuff, stuff that the administrators have to do? Questions are going to be asked, did your health change during this deployment, or was it the same? Now, remember, one of the problems we're looking in stuff, sometimes we got acute, but long term, we got long-term health consequences. So the person could be healthy one day, and then a few days later, he could be very unhealthy. You can get multiple exposures again that trigger and take you over, especially with pesticides and nerve agents. You might have had a subacute dose, and then the next time you get sprayed by a household pesticide or an agricultural pesticide, it takes you into a crash and burn time thing. Did you go to sick call? Well, we know the medical records and everything disappeared. The GAO has confirmed that. You know, we know our medical records disappeared from Desert Storm. I mean, the Connex was loaded at 3rd MedCom, and when we got back and the doctors went to get it, it was empty. And, well, one day it just disappeared. You know, what happens to stuff between leaving Saudi Arabia, in this case, leaving Riyadh, and then RKKMC arriving back in the States and opening up? We don't know. Did you receive any vaccination, smallpox, anthrax, botulism, typhoid, meningococcal, others, and whatever you don't know? Again, the smallpox vaccine, smallpox is alive and well. It is still a problem. If you've been reading the literature, we've had a smallpox release again, and they found it in the CDC, so you got a problem. Did you take any of these medications? PB, pyridoxine bromide, the nerve agent pill. That itself is a nerve agent. It's a carbamate-based nerve agent. Mark 1 antidote kit, antimalarial pills. We know the antimalarial pills are causing an incredible amount of medical problems, especially neurological and also psychological effects, again, neurotoxicity. Pills to stay awake, amphetamines, Dextran, all this stuff. Others that you didn't, you know, don't know what they were, list those things. Okay, and then it comes on down asking about your chronic symptoms and medical problems that you have. And again, this is something you need to update all the time whenever you go into the doctor and talk to your doctor about it. Chronic cough, runny nose, fever, weakness. This is in the arms, the hands, the legs, the extremities, anything that happens. Headaches, swollen, stiff, or painful joints, back pain, muscle aches, numbness or tingling in the hands or the feet. Again, goes to the arms and the legs. It goes all over. Skin diseases or rashes, redness of the eyes with tearing, dimming of vision like the lights were going out. Again, we're finding out the eye problems, and again, that's pretty much consistent. The VA is hopefully taking care of it. I know in my case and others they are, where we got the radiation cataracts. So in other words, you've got damage. We're also seeing retinal damage. We're seeing optic nerve damage and everything else, so things that are coming out. Chest pain or pressure, dizziness, fainting, lightheadedness, difficulty breathing, still feeling tired after sleeping. Well, that's a lot of people have it. Difficulty remembering. That can create a problem for both employment and jobs and just everyday work. There is definitely, as we've said before, there are a whole bunch of exercise and everything you keep in. Keep active, again, reading everything, going out speaking, doing theater, doing whatever you have to help you with your memory and keeping function. The diarrhea and constipation, it goes back and forth between the two. I mean, that's a significant problem. The entire gastrointestinal system has been altered and changed, so you get diarrhea. Frequent indigestion, upset stomach, then vomiting and ringing in the ears. So again, things that are being asked that you need to update each and every time. Do you see anyone wounded, killed, or dead during your deployment or multiple deployments? Were you engaged in direct combat where you fired your weapon? Okay, now we have the same thing. Got to remember, though, the pilots and the bombardiers are dropping the bombs and everything else. Doesn't necessarily mean that you saw the enemy down there, but you sure as heck dropped everything, so you sure fired a weapon and all this stuff coming on down. During this deployment, did you ever feel you were in great danger of being killed? Well, I think that goes for a given. Most everybody was at one time or another, and if they weren't, then they got a significant problem. Are you currently interested in receiving help for stress, emotional, alcohol, or a family problem? Okay, again, the same thing. Day one, we're in the post-deployment physical assessment form. Over the last 2 weeks, again, they're asking all the psychological questions that go with PTSD. And again, the same thing. Have you ever worn your MOP gear or your CPOG, your chemical garments? How many times did you put on your gas mask? Any alerts? What happened? Were you close to any destroyed military equipment or vehicles? Especially with depleted uranium. You can't be climbing or crawling on any of this stuff. I mean, once it's destroyed and it's contaminated, and you can't get there. You have to wear full respiratory skin protection. You have to be in a MOP 4 or MOP 5, and that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to work. Because even when we wore that and when we actually wore better stuff from the Department of Energy, and we found out that that stuff didn't protect us and it went right through. So you were having a whole host of problems and everything else. The dusty agents, Paul talked about those last week a little bit. Okay, then I have all the stuff as far as stability and how you're doing and how you're looking upon yourself. Okay. Were you exposed to any chemical, biological, radiological warfare agents during the deployment? No, don't know, yes, and explain the dates and locations. And then they come up here in the post-deployment physical assessment form. Again, the same thing all the way through. The questions are, while you deployed, were you exposed to DEET insect repellent applied to the skin, pesticide-treated uniforms, that's permethrin, environmental pesticides like area fogging, flea or tick collars. One of the problems we were running into, especially with Operation Iraqi Freedom and during Freedom, guys were wearing flea and tick collars to keep the bugs off of them. Well, the dog can because they don't sweat, so they don't have the pesticide absorption through the skin. In the human, the absorption is right directly through the skin, so that was totally off base and should have never been allowed to happen. Pesticide strips hanging all over. Smoke from oil fires. Smoke from burning trash or feces. Well, that's the entire burn pit thing. And we do know today now they have the airborne hazards and open pit registry. I've been trying to get on that myself, and it's a total nightmare because you have to have a DS Supreme log on, and trying to get that is extraordinarily difficult. What I found out is your health vet technician at your local VA can get that done for you. I haven't been able to get it done for myself, but when I talk to people at the help desk and all the way up in eBenefits up there in the VA in Washington or wherever it was, they said that you can get it there. Trying to get it on the computer is a nightmare, and there's no security, again, on the computer for personal information. So, again, all that stuff comes into play. Vehicle or truck exhaust fumes, tent heater smoke, JP-8 or other fuels. You can both burn and unburn. Fog oils, that's created as a nightmare. We know the fog oils create all kinds of medical problems, hence the military is trying to phase them out. Solvents, these are all your organic solvents, incredibly complex chemicals. Go to the CHIPM manual on hazardous materials to get specifics on the health effects and the medical needs and everything. All your different paints, ionizing radiation. Again, the depleted uranium, all your radioactive materials, you got all your dials and gauges. All this is ionizing radiation. Radar and microwaves, okay, this is non-ionizing radiation. Again, like a microwave and everything else, creates an incredible problems. Microwaves, again, we had a limitation of 10 milliwatts per square centimeter of an exposure thing. Anything above that was an isolation area. Again, the health physicist guys, what I did in the Army and all this stuff there, the guys that are out for preventive medicine on a PM team go out there and do that analysis and set up the safety perimeters. But again, it takes the individuals, guys, who are running all the radars and microwaves and radios to set that up. Lasers, again, a nightmare. You get middle lasers, and all lasers can create incredible eye problems. I think all of us have got eye problems. They probably got hit by lasers of one type or another. Loud noises. Boy, that's a total nightmare for hearing aids. Okay, all this stuff. Excessive vibration in aircraft and tanks and other stuff. Industrial pollution. Well, that's every place under the sun, sand and dust. Dr. Otto's Carnegie Mouth had came up years ago when he called LS can disease. And again, this is a chemical toxicity and everything adhering to the sand and dust. And it gets in, you can inhalation, ingestion, absorption, and injection, getting right into the open wounds. And obviously depleted uranium and all the other exposures. So this stuff is all coming into play again that has to do everything. Then the health care provider on the post-deployment health assessment form is supposed to make an assessment. Would you say the health in general is excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor? Do you have any medical or dental problems that developed during this deployment? Are you currently on a profile or light duty? Okay, during this deployment, have you sought or do you intend to seek or counseling or care for your mental health issues? I'm not sure how they're going to deal with the mental health issues when you hit an ethical and moral crisis, and that's all been avoided forever and ever and ever. They treat PTSD as if a mental health and want to prescribe psychotropic drugs, and they don't necessarily do any good at all. So you have to talk to your doctor and everything about this and get all the information out there, not just say, well, I got PTSD, and I need this mental, and I need some psychiatric medications, because that doesn't necessarily work any at all. And then you get into that things, and then we get suicidal ideations. Do you have concerns of possible exposure events during this deployment? Do you think affect your health? All the stuff the doctors post a list again, and then do you have any current concerns about your health? The doctor's supposed to go over all this stuff. And then obviously all the areas that they're going to have a health assessment. I mean, non-cardiac, operational stress reaction, dental, dermatology, ENT, that ear, nose, and throat, eye, family problems. That's your social fatigue, malaise, multi-system complaint, audiology. Again, that's your hearing. The GI, GU, GYN. Denise has talked about that. Patricia Axelrod has talked about that. The GYN is a nightmare. I mean, especially for females and all of the damage and everything that's happened because of complex exposures. Mental health, neurological, orthopedic, pregnancy, pulmonary, other, and then we come down to all the environmental, occupational, combat, or mission-related, or none. So again, these are referrals that have to be done by the doctor based on the information you have. And so you've got all this stuff that has to come down, very complex. Has anybody called in? Okay. Well, a monologue is downright difficult to do, but we're trying to go over everything. Let's go back and review some of the exposures. Well, we do know for Operation Desert Storm exposure, again, you got the chemical agents. And the chemical agents that we know they did have are sarin, cycloserin, Taboon, Soman, VX, Multiple 7, and the Novichoks. Okay, that also includes the dusty agents. They're extraordinarily small, and all that stuff goes right through the mop suit. Okay, so you got a whole problem, all this stuff. It affects all the neurological stuff. And you can be subclinical in one point and then get zapped again, and your household pesticides or agricultural pesticides or occupational pesticides or stuff, and it's going to crash it over, and then you're going to crash and burn. All the immunizations, I mean, we've been through those before. There's just a host of those things. Totally misused. We go and continue on. Radiological materials, again, this is a whole complex. It's not just depleted uranium. You've got agricultural, industrial, medical, radiological, academic, educational radiological materials. You've got equipment radiological materials, and then you've got depleted uranium on all the different munitions and all the different weapons. So entirely whole host of things. Endemic diseases. The area deployment has, each area has very specific endemic diseases. And again, you have to go back into preventive medicine, look at the medical logs and records and everything else, CDC logs, to find out what endemic diseases were prevalent in these areas. They're very unique and very different from what we have here. And so you get over there and bring the stuff back with you. A little dab will do you, and a little dab more, and a second dab will really do you. So we have a problem with all this stuff. Observed problems, again, GI, upper respiratory, rashes, fevers, only a few of them, endemic diseases. So we have a whole host. The POW, EPW things, again, the endemic diseases create a real nightmare. We're having incredible problems today, again, with antibiotic resistance. Tuberculosis is coming in and other endemic diseases that are being brought up by immigrants and by illegal aliens. So that's a nightmare. Then we get in the hazardous materials exposures, both organic and inorganic. Very complex. You've got to remember inorganic compounds and organic compounds. So understanding the chemistry behind that. Okay, you can get a physician's desk reference, a PDR, and you can look all this stuff again. You got the different books and different manuals out there that you have to do and refer to the, CRC for the Handbook of Chemistry and Physics and all this stuff. Look at the Merck Index and look at the Coast Guard manuals on hazardous materials. Again, the main thing for the military is USA CHIPM, TG-230A, and published May of 1999. Again, that's a CHIPM manual dealing with hazardous materials, USA CHIPM. So USA CHPPM, and it's a technical guide, so TG-230A, with a publication date of May of 1999. Well, pesticides, again, incredible amount of pesticides. Jim Binns and the Research Advisory Committee in their 2008 report came out with the pesticides. I mean, the pesticide lists were misused and everything. What would happen with pesticides in military is the shipping bloods, bullets, and beans, so they couldn't ship over the U.S.-approved pesticides. So a lot of times they bought them on the open market. They had no idea what the chemistry was on them, the concentration, or what the health effects are. And what do you actually have? Do you have what they claim you have? So pesticides are an absolute total nightmare. And again, the PB tablets, those are mestinone. Again, they're carbamate-based restathione. And when we look at the Medical Management Chemical Casualties Handbook, the medical handbook, they totally acknowledge over 50% that took these things during Desert Storm, et cetera, and developed medical problems. Okay, biological agents, again, the Riggle Commission report ad nauseum, the oil well fires are just a total, complete nightmare on the oil well fires. When we look at the oil well fires, what we do know, and again, we've talked about this, Colonel Andres Carnegie Mott, now deceased, Sergeant Major Jim Runge, now deceased, Colonel Dr. Herb Smith, still around, and again, Colonel Dr., at that time, a Major Tom Little, and we think he's dead, all went up and did the on-site assessment of the oil wells. The Kennison memo and everything, 3rd MedCom, identified the health effects immediately and directed everybody all the way through the entire command to use full respiratory and skin protection and avoid all the oil well problems. And again, we've got the pictures of Sheens and everything on the water and on the terrain. We got everything coming down to the air, and people breathed it in. The medical problems we had, people were taking basically what we call the popsicle stick technique. The oil well and everything got into the nose and into the ears, and they just literally use a popsicle stick to scrape it out and all this stuff. Well, the chemical constituencies, again, for this stuff, and again, this was the official report from Kilpatrick and Rochker and everything else, but it's probably more than these as far as what was identified. When we had the major medical conference at Wright-Patt in the end of January of 1992, we identified both DU and all the oil well fire problems as a significant problem requiring medical care. So what we do know for the medical problems and the exposure of the oil fires, ozone, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, acetophenone, benzoanthracene, biphenyl, chrysine, phenylanthrene, pyrene, particulates, cadmium, chromium, nickel, lead, vanadium, zinc, and then we got, again, all the volatile organic compounds, the VOCs. Okay, so we got benzene. Benzene by itself is just a horrific nightmare. Toluene by itself is a nightmare. Ethylbenzene is a total nightmare. MP xylene and O xylene. So again, we've got the whole host of everything. We've got critical pollutants. We've got polyaromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs. We got all the metals, the heavy metals, and we got all the volatile organic compounds. And again, this stuff is in liquids and mist or in solids or in powders or in dust. And it goes right in and just gets into the body, and a little dab will do you. Now, when we know these chemical compounds and all this stuff and these elements, and when put together, have a direct effect. Now, when we get, say, benzene and toluene, they both affect the neurological and the respiratory system. So now we're getting double zapped, and again, it's synergistic in nature. It's not just one single thing. So this is a whole host of complex exposures and everything. And again, you can go back, a PBS documentary that came back way, it's a long time ago, Bill Moyer's report, Trade Secrets is on PBS.org, discuss all the potential exposures and Advil's health effects. Because what we saw there is exactly what we're seeing with household pollution, industrial sick building syndrome. We're seeing in agricultural education and medicine. So we're having all of this stuff. When we look over Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, we've got pretty much the same exposures. And again, we're looking at the same thing. Immunizations, radiological endemic disease, hazard materials, pesticide, depleted uranium, food and waterborne illnesses. So we're looking at the same stuff all the way across. Again, the big difference that we have there between the stuff, we still have the residual stuff from the oil well fires staying out in the desert in Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia. But again, we didn't have any direct fires or anything releasing the stuff with Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. However, with all those organic hydrocarbons and everything, all that same stuff was showing up in the hazardous materials in the burn pits. And so hence, as a reason, the VA has now come up with airborne hazards and open pit registry thing. Again, we put that out there a long time. It's been trying to get it done and everything else, because when we look at the burn pits, again, the burn pit memo, and again, this is still hidden from the VA provider, and again, I've tried to get it to my doctor, and I've tried to get it to other ones, but again, they just trying to avoid this stuff. And let's pull this up. Okay. The MedCom directive was issued on 15 April of 2011. And again, this is on the burn pits. And in this thing at that time, they identified that all this stuff was definitely creating a problem, definitely requiring medical care. Okay. And so some of the stuff in here, and I'm trying to look at this very closely to get everything together, the medical problems that were identified, again, reduced lung function, exacerbated chronic bronchitis, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that's COPD, asthma, atherosclerosis, other cardiopulmonary diseases. Okay, and so this means that the service members got to go after medical care. So there are a whole host of things. And in this memorandum, and again, it directed to go to the VA for medical care. Well, when the VA and DOD don't hand their own memorandum out, absolutely acknowledging the health effects of this stuff, then you have to come down and try and get everything done. So there's intent to hide it. And then the VA administrators, if they have never heard of this stuff or don't have it, gentlemen, this is, ladies, this is up to you to go get all the documents and provide them. I know when we provide information of the risk, in other words, to help them get with their VA Airborne Hazard and Open Pit Registry briefing newsletter out that came out with the risk advantage for spring, summer of 2014. Okay, that's brand new. I mean, when we helped up there and sat down with Dr. Reinhart and provided the information, he's going, oh my, there's far more than everything else that's up there. So this stuff, again, is hazardous materials exposures. And the process for this stuff is what is supposed to happen is they need to get registered and get medical care, and then they get referred up to the RIST or for medical care. So the veteran registers and completes the VA Airborne Hazard and Pit Registry Self-Assessment Questionnaire. Well, in order to do that, you got to get the super DSN logon, which has created a nightmare, and somebody needs to make that easier. And the best thing to do is just print it out, print out the self-assessment and hand it to the veteran. They can copy it because not everybody has access to a computer or a computer with a DSL line that'll support this stuff. Veteran decides that they would like to be evaluated, and if so, they contact their local VA hospital. Again, go to the DOD hospital. Again, find out what needs to be done. The VA this is exactly what's supposed to be happening. Quote, VA provider will review registry questionnaire, complete airborne hazards evaluation, recommend any specialty test if needed that can be completed by the home VA, develop a plan for next steps as needed, and discuss with the veteran. Well, it's all been broken for too many years, and this is the reason why we've had to force this through. We've got a bill in the House and the Senate trying to take care of this stuff, but it doesn't go far enough probably because we've got all these same problems back here at significant at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois. We definitely got it in Hawaii. We got it at Fort McClellan, Alabama, which is a medical disaster, environmental disaster, and I was down there and we did stuff doing Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland, a medical environmental disaster. Again, that's why you got areas that are all for limits and restriction out of Chesapeake Bay. I wouldn't eat stuff out of that bay with all the contaminants coming from Pickett, you know, all the stuff up there, Aberdeen, and I mean, that whole medical catastrophe up there, chemical and biological warfare releasing all over the place. So you've got to have all this stuff put together. So it's really important to get all this stuff together. Again, the risk expertise, especially testing capability for airborne hazard exposures, again, what it comes down, and reading from the brochure, with expertise in clinical evaluation of the complex, difficult diagnosis, medically unexplained health concerns, The risk looks at underlying mechanisms for airborne hazard exposure and possible treatments for related health and concerns. Problem I ran into when I went to the risk in the pulmonary, the pulmonary couldn't do it, and so we got a pulmonary function test, and the doctor kept giving me the medications to try and get me into a normal range. And so that what they were doing is masking. So the medications might get you in a standard range, but that's not what we're trying to find. We're trying to identify, find, verify the serious health effects and the respiratory problems affecting respiratory function, hence a pulmonary function test. So given meds to make it work good and what you may do use on a daily basis for treatment only masks the problems. So again, that's a significant thing that has to be done. Okay, the multidisciplinary team, including environmental exposure specialists and pulmonologists, conducts a comprehensive evaluation and contains thorough questions about airborne hazard exposures. All of our evaluation components of previous medical work help us assess the whole veteran, depending on the individual needs of veteran previous finding. The risk clinical evaluation components for airborne hazards concern also include state-of-the-art assessments of lung function and exercise capability. Well, one thing you might think about and ask for, and I know they did for me at, down at Birmingham VA down in Alabama when I was a DU project director and working down there as the director of the Radley Labs and went to the university, is a pulmonary function. They put me on a treadmill, hooked up live arterial blood gases. In other words, they put a live line in, put your arm in a half cast, and then run lines in there. So they're pulling your arterial blood and your venous blood off into a machine. Then they put the pulmonary function, so they got the tubes down your throat and into your mouth and everything else to pick, collect all that stuff. And then you got all the cardiac leads and everything on, then you get on a treadmill and run. Well, needless to say, it ain't going to work. When you've got all the neuromuscular and every else problems and associated with everything, the respiratory problems, as in my case, it stopped real fast. And then Dr. Brunson came out point blank and said, well, pulmonary function disease as a result of depleted uranium exposure. Well, then we got all the other stuff that the DU causes and everything else. So that, again, is a whole thing that's all down there. Again, the RIS is going to look at all this stuff. Okay, lung volume, lung diffusing capability. Okay, how well the lungs function, the heart, blood vessels, muscle work together during exercise challenge. All this stuff is extremely important. So, again, as we talked about the RIS handbook, the individual has to be referred by their primary care physician at their home VA up for the wrist. And that's how it all starts. So, I mean, we'll put that handbook up on the website. We'll send it in. If you're a primary care physician, you have any questions on this stuff, you can call the wrist direct. I mean, they got no problem in answering questions and helping you get things set up, but your primary care has to do it. And the one in Washington, D.C. is 1-800-722-8340. Again, 1-800-722-8340. The one for the wrist in Palo Alto, California, where Denise is. Denise, have you called in by chance? Paul, are you there? Patricia? Okay. Okay, the wrist where Denise was going to in Palo Alto, California is 1-888-482-4376. Again, 1-888-482-4376. And the Warren Juice Clinic on the other one, and again, this is East Orange, New Jersey, is 1-800-248-8005. Again, 1-800-248-8005. Now, as you're trying to get all this stuff put together and you're trying to get additional help for everything, you might need to get assistance to get your DS log on or talk to the benefits. And the number in the extension for the VA help desk is 1-800-827-1000 and then extension 170. So again, 1-800-827-1000 and then 170. If you start running into the problems again through My Healthy Vet, the My Healthy Vet coordinator at your local VA should be able to help you get this all done. When I talked to the guys all the way up there, in Washington or wherever they were to deal with this. They said your My Healthy Vet coordinator, your regional VA, can get you this DS logon. If you run into a problem, again, the registry help desk, another number, is 877-470-5947. So we've got different numbers you can do. Again, the registry help desk for the Airborne Hazards Registry is 877-470-5947. Okay, and also the help desk and everything for e-benefits and everything is 1-800-827-1000 and then 170. The VAIG, now, you know, all the reliability and trustworthiness is all the question. Whether or not they do anything with information to give is questionable. We know when everything's confirmed, you've got all the retaliation against the whistleblowers and everybody else. But the VAIG is 1-800-488-8244. Boy, this monologue has got kind of tiring tonight. Anyway, some of the different things that we're looking at, what can happen. Hopefully everybody is going to get the medical care and everything else that they are due them. One thing, if you are in Illinois or in South Central Illinois, there's a meeting coming up here real quick. And down there towards St. Louis, and let me pull this up so we can give everybody this information as we're leaving. Okay, Congressman John Shimkus, and that stretches through from St. Louis on all the way up into East Central Illinois. They're going to have a meeting for the Veterans Advisory Committee on Tuesday, August 19th, at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 5694 in Highland. They're discussing the recently enacted Veterans Access to Care through Choice Accountability and Transparency Act of 2014, as well as other issues important to former military men and women. So that, if you want to have questions about that, call Congressman Shimkus in his office in Maryville, Illinois, is 618-288-7190. And that meeting will be from about 2 to 4 in the afternoon down there in Highland, Illinois at that VFW post. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the music is coming up. Thank you very much. A lot of information. Thank you to my producer, and Gary, thank you. We'll get the information to you so you can post this information up. God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you.